You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Flash planning.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 29th of January, 29th of July, 2021. And I know it feels like the 29th of January. We got sad news to open the show with. Eric Stafford, the witty and the well-loved creative director at AimClear, passed away last night. He had a heart attack 2 months shy of his 48th birthday. If you grew up in Chicago in the 80s or the 90s, you might have known him as the Gorilla Street Artist Gear. He was a frequent writer, conference speaker. He was the father of two children, and he passed away way too young. Eric Stafford, man, rest in peace. You're going to be missed by a lot of people in the industry who loved you. The news broke just hours before going to air, and still stunned, you know?
Yeah, I do know. Yeah. That's all that can be said about that, really.
Indeed. It's we're getting a lot of these announcements. It feels like, oh, I don't know, one a week for the last little while. Maybe it's the age we're at. The industry has been around for over 30 years now. And yeah. It's just it's weird and sad and memento mori. Go and enjoy the summer while you can, because as always, summer's almost over.
Yeah, well, apparently, and to switch us gears into a lighter note, apparently it's very close to January 29th, according to you.
Indeed. Well, things move very quickly here in tech.
So the holidays are now over. You can't prep anymore, but we should start preparing for next year, I guess.
Well, actually, let's prep the audience for next week. I ain't going to be here. Not sure if are you going to carry on and do a show next week, Dave?
Oh, we'll do a show. I haven't lined anybody up yet, but we'll have. I don't know whether I'm going to go guests or co-host or what, but we're going to have a good time. And then that'll give you and I something to talk about the week after, and.
Maybe, who knows, maybe Google will give us something to talk about.
What a surprise that would be.
For instance, like, I think, well, actually, it wasn't Google. Barry has given us something to talk about. Did you see his piece in Search Engine Land yesterday? The one where Google knows we like search engines, eh? So it built a search engine full of search engines that it all flowed to like a master search engine to figure out what the result set is, like, you know, which result set is more relevant than the others. Sound crazy, but what if I told you that all of that was influenced by clicks? Yeah, eh? So Gary Ease let the cats out of the bags, because apparently there's more than one cat to be in a bag here, on how Google compiles search results by having elements of search sort of like bid or prove the relevancy of their result sets against other elements of search bid or prove their relevancy of each other. All of this is sorted by their own little search engines and then sorted by a master search engine. That's amazing.
It, to me, it makes perfect sense. It's interesting because I'm not building. Let me be clearer here. Regular listeners will know that I do a lot of work for a company that's in the machine learning space. They do a lot of like reports and stuff like that. And so we're working on some background systems to do, I can't say what, but similar-ish sort of things. And yes, we will be using clicks as one of the metrics, one among many, because I also know, because I'm an SEO, clicks are easy to manipulate, but and they're not the only factor, because even just a click can be unsatisfying on the other end, right? Google is well aware of that. So am I. Just because I click on something doesn't mean I like it, but it is one factor. So it doesn't surprise me to hear this. Unlike last week, where I immediately went, and here's all the ways we can abuse that, in some of the discussions we were having last week, I can see the problems inherent in there. Google clearly knows them. I've had to predict some problems for my client. I can see problems they would have here if you had a creative brain and a large scale system, like, I don't know, all of us with access to AWS. so I won't talk about how this could be abused, because I think it's a great system. I'm sure other people have thought of ways as well, or how you could sort of like tweak it to like make things come up. But oh
God, like if we were in English class in like grade 12 and I was reading what you just said in like a novel, I'm like the English teacher, I'm like, okay, because you need to read between the lines and spot the metaphors here.
Yeah, there are ways to do it, right? Where it's anyway, you'd have to look at in direct dots, but you'd be able to connect them pretty fast, and then create systems to help promote your thing. What I think this really, to go outside of that scope, although it might give a little hint to where I was going there, I think what it tells people to do, and I do this regularly anyway, is look at all of your keywords using a tool you're not going to do individually. Yes, you should like visually actually look at many search results, but this one, that's not going to work. Look at the breadth, like thousands of keywords in your space, if you have a large enough space for that. And then look at which type of cert features are prevalent there. And if it's something like video, okay, that tells you what to do. Even if it's in queries where video doesn't appear, you know, look at that and go, okay, is there an absence of a video that should, or is it a case of video shouldn't rank for this type of query? Figure out where there's those holes, where there just isn't a video that fits the need, but queries like that do tend to have video. Build that video, optimize it, put it up on YouTube. You could host it yourself, but I have this sneaking suspicion that Google
helps.
YouTube helps, yeah. And put it up there. Like basically, like let's look and try and figure out what kinds of features. And because, especially if you're targeting one where the video doesn't exist yet, make sure you create some nice clickbaity. I hate clickbait, but you're going to need to do it. You know, let's say clickable titles, because you're going to need to immediately reinforce that this, you know, that a video
is in fact interesting.
Exactly. Now the downside is you're going to need multiple videos, not necessarily you, but you're going to have to actually like have competitors or preferably just resource sites also, you know, ready to put some videos out, so that if Google goes, oh, okay, here's some supplemental, they'll have a pool to draw from as well.
To sort of break this down a little bit, some remarkable things were published by Gary Ease the other day and then put into a sprawling article in Search Engine Land yesterday by Barry Schwartz. The first really remarkable thing is probably the clearest explanation yet of how universal search actually works. And this is Google. Like, Google never shows beneath the hood. Or very, very, very rarely shows beneath the hood. And I got to say, this is like, did you see Edward Lewis's new car? This is like looking beneath the hood. Oh my goodness. You don't often get to see stuff like that. too. You're right. It is very logical how Google's doing this. But for webmasters, think about this. You have different elements on a web page, text, content, images, video, things that there are specific and unique search engines for. Gary just told you that each of those search engines, you know, maintain indexes and stuff and sort of like compete against each other to prove relevancy of result sets that, you know, you are providing it. Like Dave just said, find the spaces. It's a remarkable article. Obviously, it took a long time just to, even for Barry to write that article. It'll take a while to read it. But read it you should, because I think there's great gold in there.
There is. One of the things I find really, really fascinating about this one, it actually is only occurring to me as we're talking about it, and I'm going to like contact my some folks for my client and go, how would this even possibly work? Because I don't understand machine learning at any deep breadth of you know, how something like this would work. But what I find fascinating about this one, you know, as of like, I don't know, 60 seconds ago when it occurred to me this difficult challenge is we're dealing with a moving target of metrics. And what I mean by that is with most machine learning models that I've ever conceived of, Google clearly hits this problem a lot, but the ones that I generally think of would be a model with a set desired action where I can train a model based on like the one I'm working with for that client where, yes, there are a variety of different metrics we're looking at, but they're all focused around one thing.
Yeah, there's right? a like threshold that you can measure against.
That we can measure against. In this case, we have various different success metrics. So if it's a featured snippet, a success metric might be there was no click, right? Like that in and of itself was sure. meant to be the answer. Then we're comparing with video where you would have the video and also how far in did they watch? Did they go to one of the jump links or did they like just so many sort of diverse metrics and then finding a way to pull those together into one sort of like unified, you know, sort of strategy of, okay, as they're competing with each other, how do we understand which jockeying for position produces the best result? It would be a very, very interesting challenge to do. I mean, they've got a lot of smart people who've designed things just like this. And, you know, looking at the page as a whole, it would have a success metric that would be measured against. But I think it'd be a very, very interesting challenge for some people who are way smarter than me.
Just in case anyone out there heard us say something along the lines of a click is as good as a link, we did not say that at all. Like it is not even close, because what we're looking at here, or what Google I think is looking at here, isn't a click. It's that click behavior. Like Dave said, there's something that's going to happen when a video gets clicked. The resource space, the important information the video imparts is at a certain place, and most people will probably shut off the video after that. That's click behavior. You can see what happens, and the majority of people's clickers do that. But it's not one click equals Google going Yahoo. Nobody goes Yahoo at this place anymore.
Well, and one thing I think that's really important to note, which Gary did discuss here, is what we're talking about here is separate from their ranking algorithm. A click mm-hmm. on a video goes video works, but they don't use that to specify which video works, which I also found interesting and telling that they have a different algorithm altogether to determine which videos should rank. If a video is going to rank at all, the component that Gary's talking about is they clicked on a video. Even if it's my video, that doesn't mean that I get to rank or my propensity to rank is higher because of that click. No, it just means video has the propensity to rank. I mean, ebb and flow based on other ranking factors of video specific.
So there's, again, a lot to unpack in that article and a hell of a lot to think about. But again, more than any other thing, I think that's been released from inside Google recently, this actually gives actionable ideas on how Google itself is working. What you do with that knowledge, that's a different matter, but you don't often get that kind of view inside.
No. The last time we got that, and we had a very similar discussion, I think, was when John had talked about the use of clicks and user interaction with search results. And the idea, and it is very similar to this one, that no, Google uses that to judge their search page. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to influence you whether you get a click, but it will influence their view of the success of their result. And it's very, very similar to this. They'll view it as the success of video, but not you specifically. Now, we can get into where, you know, that may or may not help you, but that's a different rabbit hole to fall down, and we can maybe chat about that another time.
Well, you know, no matter what happens, we're going to have to, because there is another rabbit hole we got to fall down to, and that's the rabbit hole of commercialism. You just can't live without it, but it's what keeps us on the air. So, folks, we got to take a break here on Webcology on WMR.fm. It is the 29th of July, 2021. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beefstock Internet Marketing, the Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, stick around. More to come up after these messages.
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Why?
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 29th of July, 2021. And fun little snippet put up in SE Roundtable the other day. Google learned two things from this article. One, if you have two results from the same domain, Google might indent the results snippet, second results snippet. And two, if we are ever in Tel Aviv with Barry Schwartz, he's the one telling us where the pizza is. So those are the two things I've learned today.
Okay, I did not know that last one. So now
well,
I know.
If you ever notice, every time Barry does a search or puts up search results, it always involves Tel Aviv pizza.
Good point.
The dude's an expert.
And we also know what his favorite food is, clearly.
Indeed. But that's kind of neat, the indentation of the second result snippet. That actually, I think, is will get you more notice than less. I think that leaves off the page.
Yeah, and one thing I found really interesting about that as soon as I saw it, it got my spidey senses tingling. And so off I went to the archives to see what I could see. And lo and behold, pulling up some screenshots from back in 2009, what did I see? Indented second listings. I was like, oh, okay, the more things change, the more they stay the same. I guess Google decided back then that they wanted to pull that back for whatever reason. And now here we are again with indented listings. I don't know why they took it away or what made them decide to test it out again here. But I know when they moved it away, I didn't like it. I mean, not because I wanted the extra visibility for clients. I mean, because sometimes it cost me and I had less visibility because the one ahead of me had the double listing. So it was, you know, sort of, you win some, lose some on that one. Yeah, exactly. But As a user, it does make more sense. Like it just makes more sense for me to go, if I've clicked on one, I don't need to click on the other. Like if I didn't like what I saw, I didn't trust that site, whatever. Now I know I don't need to go to that one.
I can tell you exactly how this went down. You know, it's been 12 years since they did the last time. That's two generations of dev techs. You know, somebody thought it was a bright idea. There's nobody around who remembered not to do it.
Okay, that's probably pretty accurate. Or they're like, you know, we've got better like systems to actually measure success now. Why don't we give this another go? Who knows? Maybe we'll see a bunch of old stuff coming up.
That's right. It's called Google Retro. I can totally see it. Okay. Where are we going? Okay, so I've seen this out there in the wild a little bit. You know, kind of raised an eyebrow at it, wondering what Google might think about it, but never really cared. But as it turns out, Google said quite specifically, no follow tags are universal signals in places you'd think a no follow should go. Like, you know, say you got sponsored content or affiliate content or whatever, you don't need to tell Google it's sponsored or affiliate. You do need to tell the users on front facing, but in the source code and the, you don't need to put a affiliate link tag. Just call it a no follow. Google will respect you for it. And if you can get away with a new follow, go for it.
I find this really, really interesting timing because I just been chatting with a client like literally yesterday, who's deploying a forum. You may have even seen me talking about that client on Facebook. And I was dealing with the like UGC and having that very discussion. I'm like, it is just the same as nofollow. It's just a little more specific. We will be going with the UGC for user generated content in the forums rather than just a nofollow, just for clarity. But to their point, it doesn't matter which one you use. I just figure we might as well remove any,
you know, any question.
Question.
Will that help you with your metrics in the long run? Like, will you get something out of that?
I don't think I will. Like, we're going to be measuring clicks in a different way on those pages just because I like to. And it's easy to do. Like, just go, okay, use Tag Manager, track this as an event and jam it over into analytics so that I can see what people click on which pages to see how many outbound clicks we get and what outbound clicks we do get, because we're actually hoping for something. This is one of those cases. It's a forum where I'm hoping to find out what other things that we're not talking about are being talked about, you know, or people are visiting, right? I might get some content ideas out of it. Who knows? But I do like the, anytime I can go, hey, Google, I'm just going to like, I understand you're smart, but I'm going to spoon feed you anyway. Like, go, this is why it looks like this. I'm sure they could figure it out. We're going to have forum right in there, right? Like, I'm sure they'll figure out why we're no following this stuff. But Google, like, we've all seen that, right? Google just isn't as smart as we think they are. And they'll say it. Like, this isn't an attack on Google. Like, their systems need to be told really clearly what things are often. And that's why we have schema. So they came out with UGC and sponsored and, you know, as separated from nofollow for a reason. Yeah, I'll drink the Kool-Aid. Like, no problem, because you came out with it for a reason, and so I'll follow that reason and I'll give you exactly what you want. At some point I see a future where I'll have to go, all right guys, need to switch it all to nofollow now because Google's pulling this back like they did with authorship.
Like, well, that's because I just don't see how Google found a lot of utility in this. I think it already vaguely knows the purpose of a link, what it is, where it came from, the content around the content they're in and they're back. But I think Google honestly thought it was going to be able to measure types of web content more easily and then found out that this doesn't actually work that way.
Because a lot of people just didn't do it.
There's that. It's not applied equally or evenly. And you have to now suddenly have to have a whole panoply of tags that do relatively the same thing. Yeah. So you got to program for that in every instance.
Right. You know what? I do think they did it like they did authorship. Like, I have a feeling they never planned on deploying authorship in any real longstanding way. I think they were like, okay, just show us what we need to know. And then once we figured out a few obscure forum setups or something like that, or like, you know, social media sites or whatever, like a few structures we haven't seen before. So they can figure out, that's what, you know, user generated content looks like there. That's how sponsored is placed. I have a feeling they'll roll it over, but my hope is they'll learn some stuff. We will be going with a non-standard form structure. Like it won't look in its layout or anything exactly like many. It'll have a lot of common traits, but not exactly in a lot of ways. So I just want to make sure. All right, and I know there's no harm done. Heck, I could put both tags on if I wanted. just for safety and go, okay, when they roll this back, then we got a backup plan in place. But anyway.
Okay. Jumping stories. This is a weird one. It's a phenomenon that had been happening for the last few months, and I think people are just sort of putting their thumb on what it is. Mm-hmm. The quality threshold cliff. So, how to phrase this? People have had websites or web pages just disappear from the search, okay? But they're no longer in the index. I guess they find it by seeing a zero out on placement in Search Console or something. But when they resubmit the website manually to Google, lo and behold, a few days later, boom, the page is reinstated in the index. So Gary Yees wrote an answer to this, and according to that answer, and this is I'm not sure how quite this works, but falling off the cliff is a warning that your site is marginal and about to fall off the cliff. So if your site falls off the cliff, be warned, you're about to fall off the cliff. Just in case you, I have to say, this is where I get confused, Dave. Why would they do this as a warning? Why wouldn't they have something that said, hey, you're about to fall off the cliff before you fell off the cliff?
Yeah.
Warning.
I have a feeling that it's not programmed in as a warning because it's such a subtle, like, language. You got to know to look, and you got to, like, half that's going to be like, I accidentally looked. Right. And then happened to look and notice that this individual page went away. Right. Or something like that. Although I'm right now thinking of ways that you could sort of automate that, like by scripts into Google Sheets or something like that to pull your pages into
a warning file.
Console and do a comparison of the two and go, okay, if I see things bounce in and out, tell me really quickly that's happening. But, I do think if you do pay attention to things like that, like if you are watching, And you'd need to know to look, but chances are if your site's at that like threshold cusp of, like, we're not talking about the cusp between position 10 and 11 or the cusp between position 3 and 4. We're talking the cusp between even being considered for possible indexing or not among the 2 million other sites. Like, you probably have some inkling that your pages are not.
Yeah, do you feel weird about your site?
Really quality. Like, I don't even know that I would like jump on that one and go, gee, I want to tell Google, hey, my site is falling in and out, because chances are you know that your site's going to be pretty low quality if that's the case, or that you've somehow done something that makes it look low quality. Now, it may not be your site, because I have seen pages drop out. I've dealt with scenarios where we've got pages in the index and I'm like, no, these are low quality. We need to like find a way to boot this stuff out. It's supplemental. It's meant for like researchers. It's not meant for like bots and people. Mm-hmm. It's meant for like people who want like obscure data that nobody can understand except for like 8 people. It's all images or something, right? Like and obscure diagrams and stuff that like, I don't really want Google to get to that. This is thin content and tens of thousands of pages of it. You hit something like that. Yes, we want to see them drop out. If you saw them in, you'd have problems because they would be marginal pages. So I think this is useful also going the other direction, because I have looked at that sort of thing going, okay, and also look for pages that are in the index. They might be hogging up other pages that if you're causing confusion on Google's end.
What was that 20-80 rule that John Mueller was talking about last week? If you, concentrate on the 20% of your content that's actually really good content, that's solid, actionable, provides great value to users, and that 80% that, like you're talking about, Dave, like, it's important, it's got to be there. There are those 8 people who need that diagram.
Right.
Well, they need that diagram, but 80 million people don't need it.
Right. And Googlebot doesn't need it. Like, because you wouldn't even know how to look for it in some cases, right? Like, it'll be like, it's an image, right? Like, how do you look for a chart?
Yeah, sure. So Mueller was stressing again, if you radically deprioritize that low quality content and really put effort into the much smaller percent, be it 10%, 5%, 20%, whatever, of your website that don't worry about the percentage number. It's just the smaller part of your website that's actually the quality important stuff. Then overall, you're likely to benefit far more, including those 8 people who need to get to that quiet, that less quality content, because it'll be easier for them to find your page in the first place. Okay, but again, let's not describe this as a warning. If you fall off the cliff, you fell off the cliff and you got a quality problem. But there's your, but it's more of a diagnosis than a warning. You fell off the cliff because of the quality.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm going to just, as a note, everything, we always need to look in everything to do with SEO. We always need to look into what is the signal representative of, because having a page on your site is not necessarily like that falls in and out is not necessarily indicative of a poor site, right? It may be part of that 80. Like I was mentioning,
our client itself
has pages that shouldn't be in there. We're trying to get out of the index, like as their primary, like we still want them, I guess, sort of like to exist because they do need to be crawlable, but more to that, like excluded, like Google understands they're useless kind of pages. You know, or at least should be greatly devalued. So it's like looking at bounce rate. Like I remember one time I panicked when I noticed our bounce rate spiked on our company site. And I was just like, holy crap. Like, this is obviously like a frightening thing, right? Like for me, I'm like, what is going on? What has happened here?
So the question is, why is it going on?
Why? Well, I went in, and fortunately I'm an SEO, so I knew like sort of the sorts of things to look at. And I went, oh, all the our rankings in our blog have spiked. So a bunch of people are coming in, reading the thing they came for and leaving, right? Like exactly what users are meant to do. Pull out the like blog from our bounce rates and, oh, okay, everything's normal, right? Like everything actually held. It was just like overarching. So all things need to be put in the right context. What are you measuring and what should it mean? And so, yeah, seeing one page go in and out, really ask yourself, if it's so important that it should be in the index, yeah, now it needs to be addressed, and you probably should have been doing that earlier. But if it's not, then just let it go. That this isn't a problem. So just let that one go and move on to pages that should be in the index and should be ranking better.
Okay, the couple stories sort of mash together here. there was a Gary East put up a post, a Twitter post a couple of days ago. Suggesting people who spend too much time concentrating on core web vitals and not enough time concentrating on really good content might be concentrating on the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So that's important. Now, that's not to say that your core web vitals aren't important. In fact, they are a ranking factor. They're just a minuscule ranking factor, and they're often being considered against your competition, not against your actual ranking. But the other story that I want to mash in together, so Gary tells us this, it's important information, and then Google comes out with an announcement, the Google Page Experience, the update that replaced the speed update. This is probably now baked into the algorithm. So Google Page Experience and everything you're seeing in Search Console is now the new metric. That's your go-to metric. But it's not that important. But it is that important. See, this is what drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I'd actually mentioned I had a little back and forth with John on my coverage of that story where he's offering a bit of clarification, which I think most people knew, but he wanted to like make sure like this is just talking about the core update. And he's like, and there's other things you should look at. And I had said, so you mean there's more than just one, like ranking factor? And he basically responded, there are three. So for people in the audience, there are three ranking factors, according to Google, just if you're wondering. Anyway, obviously that was tongue-in-cheek. There's, you know, break it down, probably tens of thousands of them if you break down, like all the little flavors and ebbs and flows that go along. But I do find it... And you probably do too, because I think that's where you're going with it. Like, oddly interesting how much sort of talk and emphasis has been put into something that they keep also saying at the same time, this isn't the end all be all. The true success metric of your site, did I convert, has always been yep. influenced by this metric. But now they've made it an official part of the ranking algorithm. Makes perfect sense because they want to send people to places where they'll be satisfied. We should I want them there too. So they do want that in there. But then at the same time going, this isn't
let's keep in mind, they rank, they don't rank speed. They don't rank pretty mm-hmm. templates. They rank
yeah.
content.
And that's what it boils down. But I mean, they should have seen this coming because they gave us a number. Do they remember what happened when they gave us a green bar? Like, we broke it. We obsessed and broke it. So similarly, we're all going, oh, okay, you've given me something I can measure. Like, it's my favorite stuff to work on. Right. And like, I don't need like there. I mean, there's things that get well above my head in like ways to really optimize for the core web vitals. But I love working with developers because I can tell them like when this number goes up there, right? Like, it, whatever you do to make this number improve, you've got a measurable. There it is. We don't have to wait weeks or months to find out to run this tool. Did it work? Right. And so we all love those, but
developers are very happy when you could do that for them.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't blame them because I like it too, where I can then go to the client. Okay. You were a 5. Now you're a 75. Like that was the difference here. We can probably do more, but all your competitors are in the 20s and 30s. So let's not worry about it for right now. Like we're faster than the other campers at running away from the bear. So we don't have to worry about that. We can just like, we can worry about our content now and things like that. Or, you know, hopefully they were able to focus on multiple things. If you're dealing with companies that could, you know, focus on a few things at once. But anyway, I do feel for them for that, but you know what? They signed up for it. They knew it was coming in. They saw what we did to Matt Cutts, all the Google reps now.
So. They'd have been that's true, actually. You know, they think they'd have been prepared.
Oh, they probably were. That's why we went, or they went, we're not doing these pre-recorded videos anymore. I'm not going to be a T-Rex. Nope.
Okay. One more before we got to hit a break. So both Google and Facebook are going to require staff to come back to work at the offices. But before they come back, they're going to have to all be fully vaccinated. I made that announcement in the last couple. Actually, Google made that announcement 2 days ago, and Facebook made their announcement two hours after Google did. Google's pushing back their back to work date into the middle of October as the Delta variant kind of working its way through California through the unvaccinated population exponentially. And, the vaccines give you like 10, maybe 85, 90 to 95% effectiveness against the COVID. Mm-hmm. That means there's a 5 to 10% chance it won't, and you might catch a breakthrough case of it. So far, the vaccines have universally given protection against the worst of COVID, which is death. But almost universally, like statistically 0.0 something of people who've been fully vaccinated have died after catching a breakthrough variant or transmission. The point is Google is pushing back opening. Facebook and Google are both going to demand full vaccination of employees. Other firms like Microsoft haven't made them mandatory, but are strongly recommending staff get vaccinated before returning to work. It's going to be a very weird set of different standards that people have to figure their way around moving forward, eh?
Yeah, and I feel for companies in that spot, but at the same time, like that's, I guess, when you start a company, that's the responsibility you take is deciding what you do. And, I can almost see the battles, you know, we all can, right? Like, it doesn't take much imagination to go, I know the conversations that they're having to deal with right now. Like, I know that's happening and some claim of rights or whatever. But as comes true with freedom of speech, these are private corporations. they get to decide the rules for what happens on their property. So that's what they're getting to do. You might not like everything, but this is what they're doing. I'm sure, like, I have no problem with this because I've already had my two vaccinations, right? Like I obviously sort of go, yep, I'd prefer that too. But taking a more, more nuanced, is this right? At the end of the day, I just fall back on it's the right of a corporation. Like, I'm a capitalist, right? Everybody listening right now is a marketer. We're all capitalists. That's just it. And these are companies that are deciding what they want to do.
Well, again, it's just, for me, I mean, is it right? Is it legal? Is it moral? Is it ethical? All of those questions come into play, of course. But It's just that there's going to be, like, you could walk across the street and walk into a completely different set of standards at a corporation That's the size of a nation state. And you know, it's like this is when you walk, I hope all of our listeners get these kind of experiences, but when you walk onto the Microsoft campus, the Google campus, the Facebook campus, you're walking into a different kind of place, into a place where you can actually feel the stated mission. You know, it's like walking into another country in a way. And then you realize that these corporations have the bank accounts and virtual power of nation states themselves. They're setting standard and precedent that's almost like law. And again, just having the different standards is going to make the Valley a weird place to be. Just like being in Toronto or in any city that doesn't have like any set out standards for people to follow. It's going to be weird seeing how this evolves over the next few months.
Yeah, it will be.
On that, we got to take another break here on Webcology. We're definitely rounding out the hour. It's the 29th of July, 2021. The show's being recorded live to podcast. You're on behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedger, Joey's Media. Stick around. We got more coming up after these messages.
Here's the truth you need to know about podcasting. The biggest problem you face right now as a future podcaster is the myth that it takes an enormous amount of time or effort to produce a high-quality professional podcast. Luckily for you, there's a solution to your problem. If you're an online marketer who really needs to grow an audience of buyers but can't do all the heavy lifting alone, then here's the solution you're looking for. Introducing the DFY Podcasting System. Here's what you get. 30 minutes of one-on-one training. A weekly podcast for you or your company. Distribution to almost every podcast portal. An embeddable player for your website. An ebook called How to Podcast, created for WMR.FM show hosts. And much, much more. And best of all, you'll start seeing results with the DFY podcast system within a couple of weeks. You're just one podcast away from growing brand awareness and engagement in your business. Log on to podcast.wmr.fm and sign up for a deeply discounted rate today. That's podcast.wmr.fm.
Webcology takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology on WMR.FM. It's the 29th of July, 2021. This is Jim Hedger from Digitalways Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And, we're pressing time. We're definitely pressing time. This is a big story for 10 minutes. But Privacy Sandbox. Google is trying to incorporate a newly found respect and love for user privacy and their EU lawyers and California lawyers and their marketing systems. Google's trying to figure its way out of a conundrum it's in. Mm-hmm. Is that a better way to express it?
Yeah, that's a good way to word that. Yeah.
Okay. And what they're trying to do is build what they're calling the Privacy Sandbox. Okay, how to really radically oversimplify this? When you think about user data privacy, there are enormous number of factors and elements to consider. Google is trying to establish the framework in which many of these factors or elements are considered, yet Google still gets as much information as they possibly can about the individual in question. And they've set a they set timelines. They're accepting proposals on exactly how they're going to do this. They want to have a minimum, as I understand the article, they want to have a minimum viable product ready for the last quarter 2022. Dave, you are infinitely more up to date on this than I. What's going on here?
Well, I think for listeners, if you want to see how this is rolling out, and I think this is more a clarification than any real details on what we need to do, which is, I mean, that's fine because these details are quite handy. But if you head over, actually, you know what? Search Engine Land does a good, George Nugent, I hope I've just pronounced his name correctly, but did a good write-up of it and sort of a good description. But what we're seeing here is their path. So we're seeing, like, what they've basically done is through grids and explanations. And if you actually follow the link over to their write-up, you can hover over stuff, sort of see what it does in the chart. But what we're seeing is where they're, the timeline around where their discussions, testing. You can see on the graph on Search Engine Land, but you can actually understand it. I had to go over to the actual piece to sort of understand it. The OT started, which is original trial, so where they're running some original trials. But basically, it breaks down and helps explain, this is the various stages. This is what we're doing. This is what's included at these various stages. So we know heading in Q4, or at some point in Q4 of 2021, we're going to be moving from just using the systems for fighting spam, right? Which is already underway in testing. We'll be seeing that expanded over into the, like, according to this, like, graph, the showing relevant content for ads and measuring digital ads. And then, halfway through quarter four, they're going to be moving, as they described, to the strength and cross-site privacy boundaries. So dealing with different, and some of this stuff is getting into technical stuff that goes, you know, above my head. Chips API. I mean, I don't know. I have no, like, I'm just full disclosure.
Oh my God, it's the Ponch and John API, right on!
But it helps us get those timelines and lets us know, like, by the first quarter, they're predicting, according to this timeline, all things going well, but we're well into testing, that on the fighting spam and fraud on the web, it should be deploying. Like, just that's where their systems will be deployed. However, we'll be looking at a Q3 2022 of the deployment of the things that we're going to, basically, they're testing everything for a year. That's boiling down to, except for the cross-site boundaries, like all the APIs and stuff like that. That part is going to have basically about half a quarter less, right? Like, they're starting it halfway through Q4 of this year, but they're going to still be deploying it for Q3 of next year. And then Q4, everything should just be completely rolled out and into what they're viewing as stage one. Like, when I say deploying, I mean in a, according to, like, the charts and stuff, that's when it will be ready for adoption, like, according to theirs. But they'll have already tested it. I can't see them going, oh, we've done a bunch of, like, real world tests, now we're going to stop everything. And perhaps, like, that'll be the stage where they're starting through adoption. And then they go stage one in Q4. Of their transition period. So it sort of helps us understand the timelines that we're looking at. I think if I'm involved, like, if you're an SEO, like, only, like, organic SEO, there isn't as much in here for you. There's still stuff, but there isn't as much. But if you're in paid search, this chart's going to really matter a lot and understanding the timelines that you're dealing with. And I would highly recommend head over to Twitter, grab, like, somebody like Nava Hopkins, who analyzes this stuff as it relates to paid. And she's been on our show a few times. Maybe we'll have her on. Maybe I'll have her on next week. if she's available, just occurred to me now, and chat about how this is about to impact really people.
You really, really should. Now, users might be either concerned or relieved to know that Google's really in the discussion stage on your privacy about most of the stuff.
Yeah.
You remember the link spam updates that ran? One ran at the end of last month, and another one actually ran just this week. That may well be the testing of the fight spam and fraud on the web that is mentioned here. So you can actually correspond with real life events.
Yeah, well, and it was interesting because I had read Barry, we've mentioned like five times on the show or something, Barry talking about that and that it's been rolling out over the last, like mostly that it had rolled out, but a lot of people are feeling the impact of the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. I like right as I was reading that about half an hour before that, I emailed a client going, oh, here's your last like 7 days of traffic. You can see this like big jump. And in your rankings, you've got this big jump over the last couple of days. And then there was part of me that just had to enjoy the fact that like, I like making gains, but if they are, I haven't deep dived into this one yet. So right now we're just dealing with likely coincidence, potential correlation. But if we are dealing with causation, that pleasant smile you can have and going, oh good, one of the competitors got hurt. Like, I know that sounds horrible, but it's like, oh, it's not just about me winning. It's like, oh, I knew you were using like tactics I didn't like and that I couldn't deploy to beat us on some things. So if you get like kicked in the butt for that a little bit, that'd be all right.
We're almost out. I think it's worth noting a couple sort of house cleaning things here. You are going to notice changes in Search Console around your search performance. I think everyone I've talked to in the last week has said, yeah, there's been visible changes here. They're either up or they're down, but there's very little hold and steady. Mm-hmm. So a lot has happened, and we're seeing the shakeout of all of the stuff that's been happening. Well, I shouldn't say all of it, but we're seeing the shakeout of some heavy stuff that's been happening because it seems to be affecting a lot of people. Enough that anecdotal evidence, everyone I've talked to and everyone I talked to, is experiencing either increases or decreases as measured in Search Console, increases in ranking and increases in traffic. I got some weird ones though. You know, you ever like bet ahead of time, you know that the shakeup is coming and you're like, okay, these guys are going to do well and these guys are probably not going to do so well.
Yeah.
I got one. I mean, I've been concentrating a lot on content because it's what I do.
Yeah.
But I've been really, really freaked out about page speed, page quality, and core web vitals. And some pages that didn't pay as much attention to core web vitals as I would have wanted them to, mm-hmm. really benefited. And I got to tell you, I was surprised to see that.
So maybe Google was right when they said it's kind of like a tiebreakery kind of thing.
I think that's, you know, that's my own little bit to throw into there. Yeah.
But for folks who want to like watch this story as it unfolds, and I'll ask you about it in like another month, they're still adding a little spice, little tweaks here and there to its impact. So hopefully, like, I hope for your client's sake that holds out. But I hope for your understanding of what should be, that it almost kind of doesn't, because then that your instincts were right.
No, for my client's sake, I really hope they start dealing with this core web vitals.
Yeah, well,
like,
I guess, like, here we go.
Deal with it, guys. I know you're listening too, so deal with it. Like, it's very important. Can't stress that. But again, so is the content, because that's what Google's actually looking for.
Yeah.
That's what Google wants. That's what the searchers are looking for. And on that, we have gone all the way around the clock. And so it's the top of the hour on the 29th of July, 2021. This show was recorded live to podcast through WMR.FM. On behalf of Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing, this is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media. I ain't going to be here next week, but Dave will. So friends, be safe. Rank well. Get vaccinated. Please get vaccinated. COVID is still real. And have an amazing week. Half of us will talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent.